Hi, everyone. This is author, coach, and speaker Jeremy Flagg, and today we're going to talk about relationships. Hey, if you're living and breathing in this world, then you have relationships with others. So our ability to create great connections with other people gives us a unique advantage in life, wouldn't you say? Relationships are the bedrock of everything we do in life. How we interact and communicate with our families, our spouses, our friends, and our coworkers dictates much of the way we feel about our lives. When our relationships are going well, then we are generally pretty happy people. But when our relationships aren't going that well, and they could use some improvement, then our lives aren't in such a happy place. Am I right? Have you ever had, or are you currently having, trouble with the relationships in your life? Have you ever wished you had some tools to help you conquer your conflicts and step into a new level of peace and joy in your connections with others? Do you know it's time to grow in the way you communicate the love and care you have for those around you? Well, if so, then this recording is for you. I want you to know something. I want you to know something very important. That most relationships don't have trouble because of a lack of love. They end up having trouble because of a lack of skill. It's our ability to translate the love that's already in our hearts for others into some tangible communication that they can see and feel that makes the difference in remarkable relationships and lackluster ones. And don't you want to create remarkable relationships in your life today? Of course you do. So today, I'm going to have you listen in on one of my Create Remarkable Relationships workshops already in progress so that you can learn some of the fundamentals of all great relationships. You'll even have a couple of exercises to process this information and get you growing. So are you ready to grow in your ability to create amazing connections and transform relationships in any area of your life right now? Then let's pick up on my workshop, Already in Progress. What you guys need to know tonight is relationships hardly ever break up because of a lack of this. They hardly ever break up because of a lack of love. They almost always break up because of a lack of skill. It's something hardly anyone talked about when we were growing up, right? Relationship skills? Who cared about that? We were learning about, algebra, right? Stuff that I use every day. Right? You guys get my point, right? When you graduate into the real world, you realize all that stuff that they were selling you when you were growing up, it doesn't matter. You have to kind of start over and figure out how to navigate the world. And what we end up using, what we end up relying upon is what? What do we end up using when we don't have what we need in the moment? What are we going to use? Whatever we know. Exactly. So we have a blueprint. We all have one, right? We have these set points that were created in us. Some psychologists say set points happen as early as 3 and never leave. Right? Now, I don't remember much about my childhood at 3, so I can't really tell you. But I can tell you that I've had certain set points that I have conquered that have been there since I was 6 years old. So, is it possible that we have some stuff that's in our blueprint, that's causing us to do certain things and be in certain holding patterns, we'll say, right? Relationship patterns and behavioral patterns that, you know, maybe just need to be dug down a little bit, looked at, and plucked out. Would you agree with that? Okay. Well, I am your surgeon tonight. So we're going to do our best, all right? Love is very interesting. Because if I asked you guys to give me a definition of love, I can bet that every single one of you would have something a little different to say about it. It's a very subjective term in our culture. It can mean the result of some stuff that made us feel a certain way, and then we call that love, right? It could just be the emotion that we feel in a moment when we're connected with somebody. Some people even go as far with love as, you know, it's almost like the X factor, right? And nobody really, you can't define it, man. It's spiritual. that might be true, and love does take us to a spiritual level inside of us, spiritual meaning at the most basic definition, immaterial, right? Takes us to another level, would you agree? When love is right, man, stuff is right. This list doesn't even exist, right? What was the best part about falling in love? Anybody ever fallen in love in this room? Do you remember that moment? Because I've fallen in love a few times. Right? I fell in love with my wife, but then I fell in love with my baby girl, right? And my baby boy. And that's a whole different kind of love. So there's now we got different kinds of love. So now it's not, right? And then, you know, some of us love pizza or beer, right? Or both at the same time, right? Nothing wrong with that, guys. So, we use the same word for all these things. It's really confusing. Agreed? So, maybe we need to split apart what we understand about love tonight. I propose this. I propose that love is not a noun. It's a verb. Love is a verb. That means that it flows and that you operate in it. So if you're not operating in it, then it's not love that you're operating in. It's a verb. It moves. You can't hold it. You can't hold on to it. It's not an event, right? So if love is a verb, then that means we're doing it, you know, we're either doing it or we're not doing it, but it's not right or wrong anymore. So let's tip the scales a little bit tonight. We're going to start knocking out what I call table legs, right? If I can knock out enough table legs, then maybe the tabletop will fall and your belief system will, you know, at least get confused enough to listen to what I'm saying, right? So love is a verb, it's not a noun, and it's not a feeling. It's just not. Let me give you a for instance. I was here in this on this campus, our school is here in this next building. And I'm at the school over here with the kids, and a man came up to the school not too long ago, and he walked in, and I asked him, could we help him, right? And he was actually looking for someone from the church. And the waiter from the church was there. It was close to lunchtime, and I said, well, friend, what can we do for you? Is there anything we can do? And he said, well, I guess not. You know, I didn't know that you had a school and da-da-da, he's him and hon. And I said, well, it's okay, man. Just tell me what's up. What do you need? Did I mention that he has his daughter with him, right? They're in some tattered clothes, and I kind of know where this is going, right? But he says, hey, listen, I have a daughter at home who has an appointment with a doctor down at Cardinal Glennon, and it's like 35 miles, man. I know, right? And I lost my job 6 weeks ago. I got no money for gas. I was really just stopping in for some gas money. Right? So, what's love in that moment? Charity. But it's a verb, right? I have to be active in it, right? I have to do it. Right? It's not love in that moment for me to say, sorry, man, but you know, God be with you. Let's pray. Right? That's no good to anybody who needs gas money. Are you with me? Right? Just like when you're in the middle of a conflict, right? And your wife says, I can't believe you didn't do that. What do you mean you can't believe I didn't do that? Right? And then all we're doing is having a fight about the same phrase but a different tone, right? I didn't do that. No, you didn't do that. No, I didn't do that. That's not helpful, right? It's not useful. So what's useful in that moment with this man is that I produce something from myself and give him something that he what? Needs. At its most basic level, love is about filling the needs of others, right? And we're going to prove that tonight. And I better not waste any more time here. We're going to be really behind the eight ball. So, love is about being a part of a we. There's nothing so cool as being a part of a we. Would you agree?
It's about belonging. Everybody wants to belong. Everybody wants to be a part of something bigger than themselves. Everybody wants to be in a, you know, a relationship of any sort. We're all seeking companionship. Can we all agree on that? But then, you know, sometimes the light goes dim. And when that happens, our focus shifts. When our heart grows dim, our focus shifts from the we to who? Me. To the I, right? To me. You're not meeting my needs. When everything's going well, we're all good to go. Right? Because the cool part about love is when things are going great, you completely lose yourself. So it's so not about you. Isn't that the best part about falling in love? You can't think about anybody else. I still remember it, man. I was sitting in the back of, what class was that? That's what I cared about, right? Right? I just remember sitting next to the Japanese kid. He was teaching me how to write characters while she's doing math on the board. And I'm like, whatever, right? I'm in the back. And I remember I was friends with Lisa for a long time. And then that one day, I was sitting in the back of class. And I looked up, and she's at the front of the room, just staring at the chalkboard, just taking those notes. And that blonde ponytail. And I looked at her from the back, and I said, I think that's it. We've been friends. I think she's the one. Just like that. And then, you know, I started angling, right? It worked out, though. It worked out. But I remember, like, not being able to think about anybody else and not being able to go to sleep at night just thinking about her and that great hair. Right? And all the other things that we won't talk about right now. Right? You guys remember this, right? Well, grab it. I want to see some smiles. If you don't remember it, then, you know, you're not smiling. Everybody has fallen in love with somebody at some time in their life. You can't convince me otherwise. Because it's something that we do. It's when we start throwing our heart out there and we start being vulnerable, right? And then when things go dim, what happens? I'm not getting my needs met, man. I'm not getting what I need. You've got to do something for me here. And then it becomes all about us. So the first thing I want to teach you guys tonight is this. When we becomes I, love begins to die. Say it with me. When we becomes I, love begins to die. Because here's the thing. Here's a quote. Love never dies a natural death. It dies because we don't know how to replenish its source. It dies of blindness and errors and betrayals. Yes. Anybody ever been betrayed? I mean like dirty, rotten betrayed. I have. Stabbed in the back. Not fun. You ever got the wind knocked out of you before? Like you're falling in a sport or maybe just running in your house and fell the wrong way, right? The wind gets knocked out of you. It feels kind of like that. And the thing is, it's not that you ever really, you're so bombarded by it, you don't know what's going on. You actually still love the person. That's why it's so messed up, right? Because you don't know how to compute it. I would never do this to you, man. Why are you doing this to me? This is how we feel, right? Anybody ever been through anything like that? Okay. Anybody ever been the one on the other side of it? Because we've all been there too, right? Like when we were kids and we wanted to make sure that, you know, I mean, I wanted to be inclusive. I mean, I was fat, so I understood what it was like to, you know, be on the outskirts of the playground. But, you know, when the cool kids came running, it was time to tell all your friends to take a back seat. I've done that a few times. Anybody ever done anything like that? It's no different then than it is now, except now we give it bigger titles, right? This list shows up. We need more skill. So here's an equation for happiness. Here's an equation for happiness. Some people say, Jeremy, you can't have an equation for happiness, but I have yet to find that this doesn't work. I've been coaching people for years, and whenever I'm in a coaching mode with a client, you know, one of the first things I'm asking them is, you know, are you happy? Are you enjoying life? Are you content? And here's what happens, right? When we becomes I, love begins to die. Why? Because we put expectations on it. We started to say, well, wait a second. I mean, I really love you and that's all great, but seriously, you have got to change that thing. That thing. You know that thing, right? You know, like when you eat the chicken a certain way, it drives me bonkers. That thing. Or when you leave your underwear on the floor in the bathroom, jeez, that thing. Or you wear that really bad cologne. Not even sure how I made it through it to this far, okay? That. Then we start elevating it a little bit. Well, you know, there's that part of you that always, you know, I hate that. Hey, wait, what happened here? Everything was cool. We were just lost in each other. We lost time. Everything was good. And then all of a sudden, what happens? Expectations. When life conditions equal your expectations, everybody's happy. Would you agree? Everybody's happy. Well, we're dancing on the beach. We're having a good time. Everybody's laughing. It's all good when life meets your expectations. Can you guys think of the last time that happened? Things were in alignment for you, and you were like, man, I'm happy. This is good, right? This is even better than I expected, because I came to this workshop thinking Jeremy was an idiot, and this is going to be even better than that, right? And then what happens? Conditions start to not meet your expectations, and then all of life kind of changes, right? Then we start shouting, and we get right. We go to have fun, but we're getting really bored, right? What's this? I love this one. What's this one over in the corner, right? This one? Can you guys caption that for me? Give me a caption for that one.
What the heck are you doing?
Right. We don't need to go to counseling. What's your problem? Right? Telepathically. She's looking at the camera like the camera's going to help her or something. You know, like, please help me out of this, right? Every time we have breakfast, it starts. All right, so you guys got your pad and your paper out tonight? Because this is a workshop after all. Here we go. So the first thing I want you guys to do tonight is this. I want you to name three things that you want more of in your relationships right now, and three things that you want less of. All right, I'm going to give you 3 minutes. Go. Less than 90 seconds. Three things you want more of. Three things you want less of. seconds. All right, who's got a complete list? I hope so. I gave you a lot of time for that one, by the way. Here's the thing. Here's why I have you do things like this. So you know, there's a method to the madness. All right? The thing is, we hardly ever spend any time journaling what we really want. We talk about it. We have a really good list of what we don't want. Right? But we hardly ever talk about what we do want. If we don't know what we want, if we're not very clear about where we want to go, we will not make it, because our mind doesn't know the difference between a big red circle and a slash through it and where you're headed. That's why you have all lived long enough to have friends, or maybe even yourself, say to yourself at 15, 16, 17, 18, or beyond, I'm never going to be like my parents, right? Mom, my dad. And then you found yourself in the mirror in your 30s and you went, son of a... How did this happen, right? How did this happen? That's how it happened. We didn't take these moments right here to be clear about where we want to go. Okay. So, who wants to give the first sharing moment? What do you want more of? Just one thing. One thing you want more of. Time together doing something you both enjoy. Good. So sharing things in common is important in a relationship. Yes? Okay. More of. What do you want more of, Mike? Quality of listening. Right? So you want to feel heard? Okay. You want to feel heard. Anybody have that problem sometimes? Okay. What do you want more of? More peace.
Amen to that.
All right, so what do you guys want less of? What do you want less of? Oh, less conflict, right? What else? Less peace? What? Oh, boring. You're less, oh, less boring stuff. Less doing things the same way, the same thing. Okay. Bob? Ooh, feeling controlled. Yeah? Who's doing the micromanaging? You? Oh. Okay. Oh, all right. Well, the intention of the 3 and 3 exercise is simply this one. When you're no longer able to change a situation, we are challenged to change ourselves. Who said that? Viktor Frankl. Do you guys know who he is? Mark, who is he?
He survived the Nazi
Man's Search for Meaning, right?
Yep.
You got it. You got all the way there. I just had to help you look. Viktor Frankl is a Holocaust survivor. So his conditions weren't going to change, were they? No. In fact, they were only going to get worse. So what has to change when your conditions won't change and you don't have power over them? What has to change in order for you to be happy according to the equation we just saw? Your expectations, right? And that's within your power, right? Because you can't control anybody else. Oh, you really like to. You really like to try, right? But the reality of it is you can't. You don't have authority over anyone else beyond yourself. And most of the problems we have with other people are really just us in disguise, right? A lot of the things we don't like about others are the things that are flying back at us telling us, hey, wake up, buddy. She doesn't listen to me. I'm guessing you don't listen to her. Just a guess. Right? So think about that. When we're no longer able to change a situation, we are challenged to change ourselves. So, who is doing the changing tonight? We are. You are. All right, so let's start off. What are you doing? This is what we call the peace pyramid. It's got an 80% bottom and a 20% top. Now, there's a lot of 80-20 rules in life, right? We've heard a lot of those, right? For instance, in coaching, I use one very regularly where I say, 80% of success is your psychology. Only 20% of success is actually what you're doing, like the mechanisms that you use. And yet we flood conferences trying to find that next little needle-moving maybe software or that cool strategy that's going to really push us over the edge. But the reality of it is, if you don't believe it, you're not going to do anything with it. Yes or no? Because your blueprint's backing up on you. In relationships, we have a different problem. We have a great relationship, spends 80% of their time helping things go well, and only 20% of their time fixing things going wrong. Somebody's already laughing, right? Because it's the exact opposite for most of us, is it not? We've got it flip-flop. We've spent 80% of our time correcting everybody, right? And 20% of our time helping things go right. How many of you have had this problem? How many of you have a mom that did this to you? Yeah, well, okay. You get what I'm saying? Mom's worried about you. She wants to make sure you turn out right. So her answer for that is, I'm going to spend 80% of my time telling you what you're doing wrong.
Never.
Wow. Right? We have all had it a little bit, and sometimes we just do it. Isn't it just more natural because the stuff that needs fixing just causes you pain, right? And so when pain is involved, it causes us like, you know, it's like having a, like somebody rubbing on your arm. Stop it, right? It's a lot easier to say stop doing that than it is, please leave my arm alone. Right? Please keep your hands to yourself. That's a whole lot harder than just quit it. Right? But I've communicated so much with those two words compared to what I did with those other five or six. Right? You learn it a lot more when you have kids, because when you start to ramp things up, they'll tell you right away. At least in my house they do. Right? Because they know they're free to be themselves. Bottom line here is this. We've probably been doing this. We need to flip it. If you want to keep the peace, peace. Spend 80% of your time helping things go well. Sometimes what that means is this. My daughter, for instance, she's awesome and lovely. And she's a kid, right? When she was little, we had to wire the house a certain way, or, you know, for safety reasons, right? You get what I'm saying, right? If you didn't do it, then, you know, you felt like a bad parent, because the society looks down upon you if you don't, like, plug every outlet with those plastic things that are so hard to get off when you need them, right? Right, except the kids can get them, right? Yeah, exactly. Right, and those cabinet things when, you know, like two, and they just like stand in front of them and they just grab their handle and they just pull them off, right? You know what I'm talking about? But we did it because why? We wanted to help things go well. But what we didn't know is that instead of putting a bunch of safety measures all over the house, we could have used a little tactic that they've known in psychology for a really, really long time that I used in my house. It was called redirection. Nobody needs to be spanked when they're that little. They just need to know, no, let's go that way. No, let's go this way instead. And sometimes you do that 500 times a day. Right? But then one day you wake up and you realize, man, they haven't touched that cabinet down there with the poisonous chemicals for a really long time. That's pretty cool. Right? Because I was helping things go well instead of saying, stop it! Stop it! Doesn't work. Right? So, the harsh reality that I'm going to deliver again to you tonight, before we move any further, because you have to believe it, before we move on, is that you probably created the problem that you're trying to solve. Yes or no? Okay. So the next proverb is this one. If change is to be, it has to start with me. Say it with me. If change is to be, it has to start with me. Pull out those notepads, because you know another one's coming. This time, I want you to take responsibility for what's going on in your life. And I want you to name three ways, at least three. I know there's a lot more. I want you to name at least three ways that you are contributing to the chaos in your relationships right now. Three ways, 3 minutes. If anybody says they're not doing anything wrong, man, come on. Come on now. At least three ways that you are contributing to the mess. If you're already finished, then I want you to start dreaming up ways that you can combat that. What's a different strategy you can employ?
Instead of, you know, raising your voice, using the same phrase over and over again until somebody gets it, like a hammer, what's a different tool you can bring to the party?
Seconds. If you're finished, remember, think about strategies to, you know, combat the chaos. Bring some order to it. All right. Three ways you're contributing to the chaos. That's an interesting question, isn't it? Care to share? Not expressing thoughts and feelings, like bottling them up. Okay? That's a good one. Anybody else share that one in common? Oh, quite a few. You're not alone. What do you know? Helen?
Worrying about unknowns.
Worrying about unknowns. Okay. So the uncertainty, right? Okay. Anybody else share that? A few? Okay. Mike? So, working late? Okay. So, not being home enough. Okay. Anybody else having that problem? Doing a lot more work instead of spending that work with the family? It's tough, man. It's tough to balance. Yes, sir? Speaking to her instead of to the problem. Oh my gosh, that was the best segue ever into the next piece. Wow, thanks, Randy. You'd think we worked together or something. All right. What do you see? First, we talked about what you were doing, right? Now we're talking about what you're seeing. Because what you're seeing makes all the difference. This is the first big one. All right, get ready. There's only two ways to see a person in any given moment. Only two ways. You can see them as a person, a them. There's me, and there's them. Or as an it, as an object, right? Now, in a very shallow way, we have this problem culturally speaking, right? Just type in beautiful women into Google and there you go, right? Or just woman in general. I don't even think it really matters if it's beautiful, you know. Because the society only posts pictures of beauty, right? As if people don't come in normal shapes and sizes. And if you won the genetic lottery, then you get to be a millionaire, right? Just by showing a little skin. That's one quick way to get treated like a what? An object, an it, right? But Randy just highlighted what happens in our relationships when this happens, right? We start to shift from you being a person to you being an object. Let me show you how this works. I love this story and I love telling it, and most people love throwing things at me for it, okay? You know, babies, they make a lot of noise. Yeah? They're awesome. They're lovely. They're beautiful. And you love holding them, and they need you for everything. And it's great sometimes, and then it's not so great sometimes. Right? I remember one night really, really well. Every night, we go to bed, go to sleep. You know, maybe we get a few hours. Maybe we don't. You know, the baby needs to, you know, eat or just cry or whatever. Right? Emily's little, first time dad, you know, and I didn't have that whole bodily change thing. I didn't have that. So I didn't, you know, I'm still easing into it. So I'm laying in bed. Lisa, of course, she's asleep because she's really tired because she's mama, right? And we heard the baby monitor. Now, I woke up. And most of the time, I don't wake up. So, you know, most of the time, I'm really a dead sleeper, man. I'm out. But this time, I woke up. And I remember it really well because I had my back to Lisa from rolling over in the night. And I'm facing the wall. And I hear the baby monitor. And I got my eyes open. It's dark. And I'm looking at the wall. And I'm like, I should do that. You guys ever had that moment? When you felt like you should do something? So now yourself, now your conscience is saying, get up, serve your wife, go do that. Handle the kid, right? She's tired. She's had a long day. She's probably been up and down and all around. She probably hasn't had good sleep for like 3 months. Get up, right? Me, though, I shifted over there. But she's mom. I don't have the equipment. Right? I can't do this. I mean, she doesn't want a bottle. She never takes it from me. It's such a pain. And then I have to go over to the, you know, I gotta warm it up, and then I gotta test it. And it's, just let her do it. She'll get more sleep tomorrow. She's off work. Oh. Anybody ever done that? What did I do? What did I start to do? What did I do? Well, yeah, I got focused on myself, right? And I started seeing her as an object. And when I did that, I started to justify myself. Anybody ever heard those thoughts running around your head? No, but I'm right. I don't have to do this. I'm right. Right? Yeah, somebody needs to apologize, but it ain't going to be me. Right? Because you did it wrong. So now I'm in real defensive mode. So now I get defensive. Anybody ever met somebody that's so defensive in life, like that's their posture, right? Hey, how's it going? I didn't tell you. I'm not having a good day. Leave me alone. Whoa. Sorry I asked, right? Like that cashier that you want to avoid at the grocery store, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. We've all met these people. Maybe we are these people. I don't know. Right? The point is, objectifying a human being is the quickest way to display your immaturity. Immaturity is manipulating the things around you to meet your needs. And I say things. I didn't include people in there because people are things to you when you're in that mode. Yes? You'll do anything to get your needs met. You just want them met. I just don't care anymore. I just want what I want. Okay? Can you handle that? And here's the wicked part. There are plenty of people in life who desire companionship and connection so much that they will allow you to do that. Right? Yeah. And then nobody ever grows up. Nobody ever matures. Nobody ever becomes who they're supposed to be. Because it actually stunts the growth of both of you. Or if it's a family, all of you. Because you've ever seen a really crazy controlling dad? You ever seen that? Almost like a cult. Right? No, dad said so. No, dad said so. Jeez. You guys have any brains of your own? Right? I remember having a couple of those families growing up. Yeah, I went over there for one slumber party. You know what I'm saying? That was it for me. As soon as you pipe up about anything individual, hey man, we can't have that around here. Oh no, can't ask any questions. No, we can't do that. That's the way we've always done it. Right? You ever heard anything like that? That's all stunted growth talking. Because it's not going to meet their needs. Right? They want to make sure they can have control over everything. I want to make sure I can manipulate everything. Different personalities do it in different ways. We're going to learn that in a second. But it's really about immaturity. Can we agree on that? So maturity then is the ability to manipulate yourself to meet the needs of the people around you. Wow. That's a definition and a half, right? How can I change myself in this moment to serve this person? It didn't matter what was going on in my world tonight, guys. When it got down to 5:00, I was in mode. And let's be honest, I've been in mode for years, ready to serve you in this moment. I've been working hard all week, making sure that you guys had lots of surprises coming to you. Because I'm here to serve you. It feels different, doesn't it? Have you ever been to a presentation? In fact, I was at one earlier today with these two gentlemen, and they'll laugh when I start talking about it, where the presenter actually isn't there for you at all. You ever felt that way? Like their slide deck is so big, and they just go through their bullet points. So come on, did you get that? Good. Now sign it up, right? Yikes. If I'm here to serve you, I want to make sure that I'm hitting you where you're at. I want to make sure I'm connecting with you, right? I want to make sure that I can manipulate the way I feel so that this goes well. I've had to do that a lot. I'm sure you guys have had too, right? When you have a kid, they don't care, like, what you feel like. They don't care. Yeah, they don't, right? They surely don't. And they're so, and you know, when they're little, they're little balls of selfishness. They are, right? They are. Until they begin to mature and grow up. But the problem is, if we get in that cycle with them, and we start, you know, going around, and we both want our needs met, it gets really weird, doesn't it? You guys ever been around a parenting situation, or maybe you've had one of your own, because I've had plenty of mine, where you just don't have any energy left, right? Dad, I want to watch, you know, such and such. Sure. Let's do it. Right? And you put it on, and 4 hours later, right, your wife walks in, and you're like, oh, I'm sorry. I know, 4 hours of TV, that's really bad, I know. But I got to rest. Right? Are you getting my drift? Okay. So, growing up is very important. When we grow up, what are we going to do? We're going to see people as objects, or we're going to see them as people. When we see people as humans, as they are intended to be, then we see them with hopes, we see them with dreams, we see them with mistakes, we see them with years of problems, we see them with pain, we see them with pleasure. Right? Just like us. We see them with issues, just like us. And a lot of times, guys, when someone presents you with some huge defensive justification for something going on in their life, it's really easy to get around that by just realizing that, hey man, I've been there too. Right? This is a quick shift. A quick shift. If you want to get out of a pattern of conflict, stop seeing people as objects. Right? When I see a person instead of an object, I can easily shift what I expect. So if I shift my expectations, what am I doing? I'm giving myself an opportunity for what? Happiness. Right. Contentment. Joy. I can enjoy that person if I can just alleviate the expectations for the moment. And if I do it once, maybe I can do it 10 times. Maybe I can do it 100. Maybe I can do 1,000. Maybe I can get so good at it that it becomes a game. Right? Say it with me. When I see a person instead of an object, I can easily shift what I expect. Welcome back. So, what did you learn? What did you get out of this that will help you approach the relationships in your life differently? Did you receive some good reminders of how to make sure you're communicating the love that you have for those around you? Do you feel more able to create positive changes in your relationships today? I certainly hope so. And I look forward to the opportunity to see you at one of these life-changing relationship events in the future. Until then, though, remember that remarkable relationships are within your reach. If you always seek to grow and mature by changing yourself to meet the needs of the other person, instead of staying the same and expecting them to change, then you will see transformation begin to take place in your relationships. When we shift the focus from getting what we need to helping others get what they need, then that love will return to us every single time. Friends, thanks for listening today and for giving me the opportunity to serve you and help you grow in your ability to create remarkable relationships. You can always visit me on the web at jeremyflagg.com, where you can find more great content that ignites the purpose, passion, and power within you. And I'd love for you to become part of my online community by liking my page on Facebook and following me on Twitter. I look forward to seeing you in person at one of my live events in the future. And until next time, this has been Jeremy Flagg reminding you to learn from your experiences, love with your actions, and lead a life worthy of your calling today.